Our next case this morning is Schulte versus City of Seattle.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Rebecca Boatwright. I'm here on behalf of the defendant, City of Seattle. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes. Your Honor, the city moved for summary judgment on three of the four elements of a negligence action: duty, breach, and proximate cause. The issues on proximate cause have been well preserved in the record that's before the court. The inquiry is relatively simple. The case law is overwhelmingly in favor of the city on those points, as affirmed by Division 2 in August of 2015, relying on this court's decision in Borden. The Division 2 case, which I cited to in my reply brief, is Smith versus State. I'm going to forego any argument on proximate cause unless this court has specific inquiries and rely on the briefing below. The issue in this case relates not to whether the city owed a duty, but as to the nature and scope of the city's duty, given its obligation to supervise Mark Mullen with respect to his January 7th, 2013 conviction. The case law that governs this inquiry has been set out by Division 3 in Kelly versus State and by this court in Whitehall versus Kelly, which Whitehall versus King County, which relies on Kelly.
Launch into that. Let me just make sure I understand what your basic position is. If I understand correctly, you do not deny that the city owes a duty under Hertog.
The city owes a duty under Hertog to perform
the duty to control municipal court probationers to protect others from reasonably foreseeable harm resulting from the probationer's dangerous propensities. That would be a duty instruction that would be given to the jury.
That's the duty instruction subject to the gross negligence standard, which was enacted by the legislature post-Hertog.
The jury would be instructed on the meaning of ordinary negligence and the meaning of gross negligence.
That's an interesting question that the trial court raised. I don't think you get there because the gross negligence inquiry is what controls by statute and by prevailing case law. So the duty
is... Well, whatever. But, I mean, they would be instructed on gross negligence. You're right about that. And I guess my only assumption was that in order for a jury to understand gross negligence, they have to understand ordinary negligence. But that's not before us. I'm just trying to make sure I understand what your position is today. And so if you agree that the jury would be instructed on duty, and you're not questioning that there are enough facts in the record to support the duty as stated in Hertog, in other words, the probationer had dangerous propensities, the damages to the Schultes was a reasonably foreseeable harm. So what your position is, I think necessarily, is that you contend there's not enough evidence to prove breach of duty.
I'm contending that there's nothing in the record that supports that the nature and scope of the city's duty, which is a legal inquiry for the court,
The duty is a question of law for the court, but I think it's really helpful to the court to talk about it in the terms in which a jury would be instructed. I find it sort of confusing in your brief where you talk about how they want to expand the duty. Okay, they're not expanding the duty. The duty is as stated in Hertog. The question is, how do they prove breach of duty?
You prove breach of duty.
If we talk about scope and nature of duty, we're talking about stuff that doesn't get in front of the jury.
That's correct, Your Honor, and the city moved to strike all evidence relating to the arguments that the scope of the city's duty extended either to ensuring that Mullen comply with DOL regulations regarding the installation of
Isn't that argument really a question of whether, in other words, the plaintiffs have made these allegations. Now, how are they going to prove that there has been a breach of the duty? And ordinarily in a negligence case of this type, you see some kind of testimony about what is customary, what's the normal standard of care for people in this situation.
That's correct.
They've presented some expert testimony, and you're basically objecting to it.
We objected to that testimony in our response on motion for summary judgment. The trial court acknowledged that that evidence may in fact be inadmissible. trial. In other words, the court deferred the CR56E inquiry until a later point of trial. That is error under the rules
of civil
procedure.
Now, do you agree that it would be proper to instruct the jury on AR-11?
Yes.
And also on the policies and procedures?
Yes.
Okay. So that would be part of the set of instructions. So then would it not be proper for the plaintiffs to get an expert witness to talk about whether those policies, whether that rule requires some specific actions in the normal course of administration of a probation department?
If that expert had some expertise with respect to Seattle Municipal Court's policies and procedures and the application thereof by its probation department. The legislature in Chapter 35 has delegated to municipal courts alone the authority to establish their probation departments and direct their activities. That's mirrored in Administrative Rule for Courts of Limited Jurisdiction.
So 11. Really what we've got here is a question about the admissibility of expert testimony, because you're not disagreeing that they could offer some experts, but you think that the experts have to be testifying based on expertise developed within Seattle.
I think there has to be appropriate foundation, yes. Moreover, even if you accept the expert's testimony at face value, you still don't get past the breach of duty in this case because of the gross negligence standard. The trial
court... That's a different question. That's a sufficiency of the evidence question.
Correct, which bears in part on the expert testimony. The under the gross negligence standard, there has to be substantial evidence of serious negligence. In other words, a showing that that Ms. Lamond, the probation counselor, did not exercise even slight care. The court listed all of the things she did do, including all of the extraordinary steps that she took, given that nothing was required of her until April 8th. After this accident, my time has gone surprisingly fast.
Well, just a comment before you sit down. Is it listening to you? I felt that you were beginning your jury argument, and so I guess you can explain to us why that is not a jury argument. It is really an argument for the court.
Got it, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Ken Masters for the Schultes. And if I may, Your Honor, it's an honor to be able to appear before you for your last argument. As I'm sure it is for counsel. Your Honor, I agree with your analysis. Plaintiffs would agree with everything you just said. That is how the instruction would go. And if you look at page 12 of the reply brief of the state, what they say is, contrary to that analysis, under the policies and guidelines that direct Seattle probation counselors in their duties, nothing was required of Ms. Lamond. Now, that is inconsistent with her talk. Sorry, Your Honor. Go ahead.
Would there be a standard of care instruction? What would that look like? What expertise would be required for someone to express an opinion about whether that care standard is?
Standard of care would be gross negligence.
No, standard of care, okay, there's two, it's confusing because the law uses standard of care in two ways. One is to talk about negligence is the duty to use ordinary care, or gross negligence is the duty to use slight care, but standard of care is also used, and we're most familiar with it in, like, malpractice cases where we know that you have to have expert testimony to come in and talk about what a reasonably competent physician or lawyer will
or
do.
Judge.
We don't usually get sued, but
well, in this case, the question is Judge Shelton,
what a judge would do. Okay,
who
but
did this kind of work for 19 years, came
right,
in and
so
testified.
We're talking
this
about
is
that
negligent.
Kind of standard of care and that kind of expert testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I read your brief correctly, you appear to be arguing that anybody who has experience as a probation officer, no matter where they got it or what it consisted of, can come in and talk about the standard of care for a reasonably competent probation officer. Now, why is that not ruled out by the fact that, as authorized both by the legislature and the courts, the city doesn't even have to have a probation department, and if it does, it defines its own rules?
Well, respectfully, that seems... I may misunderstand your question because it seems like a non sequitur to me. The question of whether these folks who did municipal court probation, supervision, and Judge Shelton, who actually sentenced people under this, have the expertise, the arguments about whether or not the particular expertise they have it really goes to the weight. But I don't understand what the how that connects to the fact that ALJ. Okay,
the
great.
For the question is, we have a statute which appears to allow the court that is creating the probation department to define the scope of what that probation department is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And should someone who has no experience with the application of the rules adopted by that particular court be allowed to express an opinion as to whether someone working under that set of rules met the standard of care required of a probation officer working under that set of rules?
Absolutely.
I think that's the question.
Absolutely, they should. And it's the same as though to say, for instance, in a medical negligence case, you should a doctor who does this same kind of work at a different hospital but isn't familiar with the particular procedures of this particular hospital, should they be able to testify in the standard of care? The answer to that question would be absolutely yes. They should be allowed.
We have a statute that says the hospital can decide what the scope of what the doctor
does. I would disagree with that, Your Honor. There's a lot of quality regulations that allow the hospital to place a lot of restrictions on doctors, but the standard of care for a
physician is statewide.
And the standard of care for a probation officer should be statewide as well, Your Honor.
It should be.
I believe it should be. Well, because it's a standard practice. Well, Your Honor, you cannot say what you said a moment ago about what Hertog says the duty is, and then turn around and say the city of Seattle can adopt rules that eliminate that duty.
Hasn't the legislature intervened, and does it have the authority to intervene to restrict the breadth of what was said in Hertog?
It has not intervened. If it wanted to intervene, it had to say so. If it was restricting Hertog, it had to expressly state that it intended to overrule or restrict Hertog, and it did not do that.
What case says it has to cite a case when it's restricting?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I do not have that case cite for you, but there is a great deal of case law in the state of Washington that says that if the legislature wishes to overrule a case, it must do so expressly.
All right, you're really going off on a topic that is distracting from my inquiry. My inquiry, as I mentioned earlier, it looks to me like this case really revolves around the admissibility of expert testimony.
Which they did not appeal from. The city
acknowledges that Hertog states the duty. All right, and, mm-hmm. and you're alleging breaches of the duty. In order to prove breach of a duty, you're going to have some expert witnesses. And what the city is objecting to is to having expert witnesses testify for you on the basis of some nebulous idea that there is a statewide standard of care among probation workers, the same as there is for doctors and lawyers, and that instead the evidence of breach of duty should come from someone who is familiar or has practiced in the area where the Seattle Municipal Court has created a court that is subject to certain restrictions.
The standard that the duty that they have to meet and the standard they have to meet is established by Supreme Court precedent, and the city of Seattle has no authority to restrict that standard.
I didn't say they did. I'm suggesting that there's a question here about the admissibility of expert testimony.
There isn't a question, Your Honor. They didn't appeal from that issue. Judge Ramsdell ruled that that evidence is before you. He didn't abuse his discretion, but they haven't even argued that he abused his discretion.
Mr. Minister,
so that evidence is in the record.
Mr. Minister, the municipal court judges determined they could have said we're not going to, as King County did, King County District Court said we're not going to supervise misdemeanants anymore at some point. Here, Seattle Municipal Court determined that they were going to supervise through their probation department misdemeanants. The policy says that the probation officer will assess the risk category. Here, Mr. Mullane was assessed at a level 3. It goes on to say the policy is that they review cases for the following. Primarily, one of the conditions that is set forth in the policy is that they review the conditions that the court imposes. I'm sort of in the framework of the questions that the panel has asked and reality here and the experts. Do the experts get to come in and say, compliance with the court's sentencing conditions, and there were a number of conditions here, including no further law violations and no alcohol consumption. Does an expert get to come in and say it is a breach of that duty given these requirements that they do some affirmative checking to ensure compliance with at least the court's imposed conditions?
I think that Joyce answers that question. I think Joyce specifically held that Mr. Stowe specifically could testify that. It also held that Mr. Hall could testify to that both met the standard for the standard of care and also met the standard for causation, by the way.
Because I'm not sure how...
Specifically the two witnesses, and we also have Judge Shelton.
So why isn't that just a pretrial matter to determine whether or not the expert witness is qualified to testify about...
That's what Judge Ramsdell said. He allowed the evidence in for purposes of the summary judgment.
Maybe I can hear from Ms. Boatwright.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you said that the Seattle can't overrule Hertog, and I understand your point there, but suppose that Seattle had decided that the resources as it had, all they were going to do is they were going to define who were the most serious offenders and only supervise those. Other probationers, they just weren't going to bother to supervise. Would you then argue that if they failed to supervise a very low-risk offender who nevertheless caused an accident, that they were still subject to the Hertog duty?
The court in Hertog was, of course, addressing the Seattle probation officer in a municipal court, and it said that their officers have a duty to control municipal court probationers and to protect others from reasonably foreseeable harm resulting from the probationers' dangerous propensities.
So are you saying, in an answer to my question, that they have to supervise everybody? They can't decide.
In relationship to their dangerous propensities. So if the city of Seattle believes that this person is not dangerous and wants to take a risk of not supervising them and thinks that there's not going to be a problem, that's a risk they're taking, but that they can make that decision. That does not alleviate their duty under Hertog to actually control the probationers. So we ask you to affirm Judge Ramsdell and reverse this case and remand this case for trial. Thank you.
Your Honor, before I begin, I believe I may be the last attorney to stand before you in oral argument in this court, and I'd like to echo my esteemed counsel and say it has indeed been an honor to be here today and before you these many years. I think the argument about Hertog can be easily waylaid. The legislation enacted with respect to the gross negligence standard in no way intervenes or attempts to overrule the court's decision in Hertog, because Taggart and Hertog essentially both address the element of whether there is a duty. Neither address, other than by reference to the reasonable care standard, how that duty is to be carried out. The legislature has made clear, the administrative office of the courts has made clear, that how those services is delivered is a matter for the court to decide based on the court's resources and the court's directions to its probation counselors.
Counsel would have us believe that there's a duty to every probationer and to the general public with respect to every probationer, regardless of whether the municipal court decided to supervise all probationers or only some certain category it chose to identify. How do you respond to that?
Well, the court can certainly take some individuals out of probation by simply not assigning them to probation. Once they are assigned to probation, the dangerous propensities of each person under supervision are addressed by way of the risk assessment score, under which there are varying levels of by which misdemeanor defendants are supervised. So level 4, which is basically a once a year.
Can the court decide that there is some category of probationers it chooses not to supervise and then have no liability for the dangerous conduct of those probationers? In other words, can the court simply sentence somebody, impose some conditions, and by rule choose not to supervise that category of probationer?
Unless otherwise directed by statute to put such a person under probation, then the court certainly has the discretion to release somebody and not require them to be under probation. They might be under court supervision separately and obligations to report to the court which is now in effect post this incident with certain DUI offenses. But it is not the case that the court has to put somebody under probation absent statutory directive in the first place.
Do you anticipate, if this were to go to trial, that you would be presenting your own witnesses that are who are somewhat analogous to the plaintiff's witnesses? I mean, you would have, I think it's Judge Kondo, and she would be a primary witness who would explain all these policies and the rule that the Seattle Municipal Court has adopted, as she does in your declarations. I mean, she would get up and testify. It's a very limited kind of responsibility, and the custom is, or the standard of care is not to reach out and call people up and have interviews with them oftener than what is specified.
Correct, Your Honor, although to...
This is what we've decided. This is how our risk classification system works, and we think it's a good one.
Yes, and it's also the same risk classification system that the state is mandated by statute to use with respect to its DOC.
So then doesn't it make sense then that the plaintiffs would also have similar witnesses?
They could, but they don't. And the reason why the witnesses are not analogous is because each of the witnesses that we put forth in our motion for summary judgment and who are deposed at length have the foundation to testify as to Seattle Municipal Court policies and procedures. And no one, let alone Mr. Stow, a Puyallup Municipal Court judge, or Mr. Hall, have the foundation to come in and say what they think policy should be. And that is exactly what this court addressed head-on in Whitehall when it declined to expand the scope of the duty in the manner that the plaintiffs there, as in here, urge.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
The court will be in recess. Oh, what is it? Left.